Hello and welcome to episode one of the Glass Houses podcast, the podcast where I'll be bringing you stories from people involved in the Northwest Ohio punk rock scene. Today on the show, we have Jacob Reinhart of the Stinky Meatballs, solo work, and runs the Ohio punk rock fan page, and also has a Jacob Reinhart YouTube channel where he does guitar covers, right?
That's right.
All right, Jake, thank you for being on the show. I'll start this off the way I'm going to start them all off, which is asking the Damien Abraham question, which is, how'd you get into the punk? Do you remember the first time you came across the genre?
Absolutely, actually. a lot of people would think it's, especially like older punks that are friends with me, they're like, oh, that's kind of lame, that's unconventional. But it's kind of how a lot of younger people did, since I'm only 23. So I grew up on PlayStation 1. It was Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4, which was my first kind of introduction to it. And the very first song that played once I started a new game in the career mode was Bloodstains by Agent Orange, because they played the songs in the soundtrack alphabetically by the band name. So ever since I heard the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, that was like my very first, that was my very first taste of it. I had no idea it was, and then I just ended up really liking it. I would always sing the songs every time they played, and I never got sick of it.
Who else was on that soundtrack? Because I remember there being like, I remember like seeing people play the Tony Hawk games, and I don't know if it was that one, but I remember there was one that had like Bad Religion and like Hot Water Music and stuff like that. Was that the same one? Was that four?
Four didn't have Bad Religion or Hot Water Music. That was actually, Bad Religion was on like six Tony Hawk games, but Hot Water Music, I remember being on Tony Hawk's Underground. They had their song Remedy.
Okay.
But on Pro Skater 4, it was, it had Agent Orange, Avail, the early Offspring, it had Bouncing Souls, it had Zeke, it had all those ones. And for Pro Skater 3 and 4, they were both released on PlayStation 1 and 2. And PlayStation 2 had more songs on it and more levels. So more that were added to that one were Less Than Jake and Flogging Molly and Dropkick Murphys were on the PlayStation 2 one. So they were included.
Yeah, I got to wonder how many people got into the music just from, you know, playing those games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's no, I don't think there's any shame in like how you got into it. Because, right. you know, for a lot of people even, Bloodstains is a pretty good starting point. I mean, Agent Orange, I mean, because a lot of people, you know, a lot of younger people, you know, got into it, you know, the kind of like, you know, Green Day or Blink 182. And there's no shame in that, you know, being older now, you know, because when I was younger, it was like that kind of stuff you kind of thought was lame. But now it's like, well, it's good there was stuff like that, because it doesn't matter where you start as long as you get to where you're at. But you had a good springboard starting out there. So when did you know that you wanted to get into playing music? Was it right away, or
The way that it went about it was I had, not because of the punk stuff that I got into guitar, but a lot of people got into more rock music, especially with the game Guitar Hero. So basically I had Guitar Hero 3 Legends of Rock after playing it at like my babysitter's house. And then I ended up getting Legends of Rock because my dad bought it for me. And that's how I learned of all the older bands like the Scorpions and Poison and all the other ones and stuff. And basically I had a guitar at that point. My dad bought me like a little starter Fender Squire with the little bitty combo amp. And I had basically as well a Power Tour electric guitar, which was the little toy the little buttons that lit up and stuff. And they were playing like chords and stuff. They had preset songs where you can learn. And I had the electric guitar, and then I realized it's not as easy as just hitting buttons, because I was trying to play the guitar just like I played the Power Tour thing. And a lot of people want to really get into metal and stuff, which is how a lot of people get into guitar. And where a lot of people kind of give up in the sense is that they start out like, I want to play just like Kirk Hammett. I want to play all those solos. Yeah. And then they realize it's not as easy as they think. And then they give up. And that's where I always, always say I kind of got lucky that Punk is my favorite, because it's literally, like, I mean, there are some, like, more complicated, like, Punk, like, even from the 80s. But, like, much of the Punk is basically all, almost all power chords.
I was just going to say power chords.
And basically in the sense that I really wanted to get back into guitar when I was in junior year of high school, because I had a buddy who was really good at guitar. And my guitar was just collecting dust. I was like, you know what? I'm going to restring this and I'm going to try to learn. And I tried to learn some of the stuff he knew how to play. And then I was like, you know what? Let's try this Punk stuff out again. Because I knew about it. But then in high school, at that same time, I learned about my buddy with the guitar. I had one of the cringiest rapper phases you would ever think of. And it was, oh my God, it was terrible.
Hey, you're talking to a guy who was a juggalo in high school. So don't feel bad.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But it was one of those instances where it was like, you know, I tried to make that stuff and then I learned about the guitar and I was like, yeah, let's get into Punk again, because I remember I really liked this. And then there was an app called Songster, and later I got into ultimateguitar.com, where they have tabs, not sheet music, but tabs where it lists, like, it has the six strings and it has the numbers on it that coincide with chords. And I was like, okay, let's try to learn some Bad Religion, because I had a CD collection at that time I started up. And then I was listening to Bad Religion's No Control, and two
great of those, album.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I even got the shirt. And, two songs from that album, I think it was Big Bang was on Underground and You was on Pro Skater 2.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that one.
And, I was like, okay, let's try to learn, Big Bang. And I was like, okay, it's a little fast, but I can at least slow down and stuff. And I was able to kind of really get into punk rock guitar because of Bad Religion, because no offense to them, because of how easy it is, but you know, it's really much of punk. I mean, the Ramones, if you, like, you know, wanted to learn the bar chords as Johnny Ramone actually played, you could still play it with just power chords, as much as the elitist will say it's not completely right.
Yeah. But, yeah.
It's one of those instances where it's like, it's a jumping off point for me.
Right.
So, and you learn a lot more techniques. Like, lessons are kind of like, they're good for people who want to, like, really, really get into it. But if you, like, just want to play punk like me or any other person that really wants to get into it, it's really like, you know, it's jumping off point. It's just to have fun.
Yep. Like, I was just going to say, right. Yeah, it doesn't matter how technical it is. I think the point should be to have fun.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm in a band that's going to be turning 20 this year, and that's what it's all about, is having fun. If you're not having fun, there's no reason to do
it. Right. Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to grab a water real quick.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That'll be some nice noises. So when did the YouTube channel start then?
Basically, I had, like I said, with the cringy rapper phase, I had a YouTube channel at that point. I started in 2012 when I was 15, and I would upload, like, quote unquote, original raps, which is basically me shittily beatboxing into a mic and then rapping over it. And I mean, that's basically, even then I kind of had the DIY ethic of, you know, you make do with what you have.
Yeah.
And in that sense, like, some of them, I mean, it's a laugh. I regret nothing. A lot of people, like, would really be like, man, I regret my emo phase or my scene phase. Oh my God. I feel sorry for everybody who knew me at that point, but it's like, dude, it was a learning experience.
Yeah.
And
everyone starts somewhere.
Right. Yeah. And, with the punk stuff, I had that YouTube channel. Basically, with that YouTube channel, with the rapper phase, it's still up. I just watch people I'm subscribed to with it now. But with the guitar cover YouTube channel, a lot of people said, like, you know, support your local scene and all that stuff. And basically how I thought of a way to do it was to do guitar covers of local bands. And a lot of the ways that I learned a lot of songs was because I watched people do guitar covers. And I realized, you know what, there's, why don't I do guitar covers of, like, smaller bands, not just, like, just within this scene, but also there's a lot of really good punk rock bands that I discovered through YouTube and through Instagram and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I really like these guys. I want to show them that I have appreciation for them. Not that, you know, I'm trying to show, like, oh, I'm better than you. I show more support than you or whatever, but it's like, you know, it's like I wanted to show my appreciation in some way or another.
Yeah. It's just doing your part, kind of like I'm doing with this podcast here. But that's how you first kind of got on our radar, was you had done, was it March of the Kool-Aid Killer?
I believe. That's right.
And I think even from, we've had you on stage with us even a couple of times, which was awesome, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah. It was fun as hell.
But yeah, so and that was just like I said, we thought that was really cool, and we really appreciated it, and it was cool to see. So when did the impetus to start a band then start?
I've always wanted to do that at that point. Like, it was always a bucket list thing for me. Basically, I had the guitar, and then I was watching a guy on YouTube who's really popular. He was popular then. He's even more popular now. A guy named Davey 504. He does like these awesome like comedic bass videos. He used to do like these like different kind of solos and stuff. And he would do like 100 great bass lines and stuff. And I was watching him do that stuff. And I got really into bass with that. Not that I play like him, but as well as one band I can point to that really made me want to get into playing bass as well was Older AFI.
The Old AFI was great.
When Jeff Kresge on Answer That and Stay Fashionable and Very Proud of You, dude, those bass lines are killer.
Yeah, those are both great records too.
Right. And so that like, and as soon as I got the bass and stuff like that, I really kind of got hip to it as well. I mean, anybody can really pick it up and just guess how to play like Another One Bites the Dust or stuff.
Right.
But, and I also really like the elaborate bass lines, because if it just follows the guitar, it kind of could get boring a little bit with bass.
Yeah.
But you gotta really add a lot to it. And the drums, one YouTuber, because I'm like, I noticed I'm pointing to YouTubers for this stuff, but that's kind of like, you know, the future is now, old man.
Yeah.
Kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
But, this one guy named Kai Smith.
Yeah, I'm familiar. Yeah, I like all this, like when he does like every Fat Records band, yeah, and he does all their stuff.
The drum,
yeah,
chronologies.
Yeah, yeah. I think Strung Out was like the first one I saw. Yeah. And it was amazing.
My first one was of the Australian band Frenzel Romp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because I was really big into Frenzel Romp in high school. The reason why is because of course, a video game called TJ Lavin's Ultimate BMX for the PlayStation 1, which is another game I discovered also Mill and Colin and Unwritten Law from.
Yeah.
They had songs in that one too.
Both great bands.
Absolutely. And the way that I was watching him do it, and I was always heard the beat bap da bap bap da bap and like all the other punk bands, and I actually saw him doing it. I was like, wow, it looks a lot easier than I thought it would have been. You know what I'm saying? And then I was just seeing him just fly through these songs, and I was just like, dude, I need to get myself a drum set right now. And then I really studied his kit, because he doesn't have a Neil Peart complicated kit, but it's just a snare, high tom, rack tom, two crashes, a ride, and hi-hats, and a kick. That's all it is. And I was just like, that's a punk rock set. That's a punk rock kit. I can do that. It's affordable.
Yeah.
So, and that's how I was able to do it. And a way that I always thought about doing it too is I always wanted to go about this route. I'm really glad I was able to. Was I write all the songs and I home record the stuff. And I use the same mic to record my drums and my vocals and same interface as well, because it's all a combo. I use the same one that I use for my guitar covers. And the way that I record my guitar covers is I put the mic up to my amp. That way I can record it. Because one thing I see in a lot of guitar covers that, though, are helpful, you'll hear a lot of the ch-ch-ch-ch of the pick on the strings.
Yeah.
And using the raw camera audio is not terrible. If it's all you can do, that's, you know, make
right.
what you can. But
right.
I like to make it as easy on the ears as possible. And I am able to mix it in Audacity. I put the song in there, and then I record the camera and the audio separately at the same time. And when I record my guitar and my bass, I just plug those into the interface. But I always wanted to do it like in the sense of that. So that's how I usually record my stuff.
I gotcha. And then with the Stinky Meatballs, you've got kind of a super group over there.
Yeah,
Benji's
on drums, Eddie's on bass, and my buddy Brandon Collins, who's been in a bunch of bands as well.
So I'm looking for. I haven't seen you guys yet, but it's on. Actually, when are you playing next? I'll let you plug stuff real quick.
as a full band, we don't have any shows booked yet, but I do have an acoustic set that I'm going to be doing November 16th, which is the Celebration of Frankie's, one of the Celebration of Frankie's ones, because you know they're...
That's right, yeah.
They're closing.
Yeah, I heard about that, unfortunately, yeah.
Innovation won't be booking there anymore, but yeah, I'll be doing an acoustic set. It would have been a full band set, but unfortunately our drummer won't be in town. But it's going to be an acoustic set, and everybody else is going to be full bands, but it's going to be performing off the top of my head. It's going to be me under the name Jake Meatball, performing Stinky Meatball songs as well as other covers. And the other bands that are going to be performing there off the top of my head are Split Second, Sick Jeans, The Devil Dolls, Snarly, Take Weight, and Eagle and the Maniacs.
That's a pretty good bill.
Yeah,
that's not one you want to miss.
Yeah, the best thing about that bill, too, is one thing I wanted to add as well, is when I started going to shows, my first completely local show was the Black Swamp Pre-Punk Fest before the second annual actual Black Swamp Punk Fest. I remember seeing Just Shy of, Yeti Machete, and Cancel Out. Those were the bands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was the first time I saw.
Yeah, I remember that show pretty well, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I remember that show, too, because the more shows I went to, the more people I met. And all these people I've met, most of the people I met, I am actually on a bill with almost all of them. And it's like in the very first place that I met all of them. So I think that's pretty
cool. Oh, that's really cool. And that's another thing too, like about this scene right now. And really for the last at least decade, I mean, everybody is just so approachable. I don't feel like there's anyone really right now that has, you know, an ego.
Right.
I think and that's why I think this version of, you know, what's happening in Toledo now is going to stick around for a while.
Absolutely.
Cause in the past there would be times when it seemed like things were going to happen, but there'd always be a couple bands that were just, I would never name a name, but there would sometimes be bands who were, you know, you could tell one or two of them kind of had an ego.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that right now. Right. Everybody, all the bands that I've seen or that we played with, all of them have been 100% cool. And I think that's going to go a long way in where we go from here moving forward. Well, that covered one of the questions I was going to ask you, which was what was your first show? Was that your first show, your first local show, or what was your first show altogether?
My first local show. Well, I wouldn't say it was a completely local show. That if that was the completely local show, then that was the one. The one before that though, I discovered, a band that's no longer together, but I'm still really good friends with them. And a lot of the members went on to form a kind of a scrams band right now called Humid. The first one that I went to see local punk bands play was a now extremely huge band, Code Orange.
Okay.
They played Frankie's, and the openers for that show were Blackstone, Population Control, Tugboat, and Wax. Population Control and Tugboat are no longer together, but again, I'm still really good friends with those guys. And they went on to create other bands that are still playing and active, and I enjoy all those shows. But that's also the way that I discovered Population Control. Before that was I went to one of the locations of Allied Record Exchange and saw the Black Swamp Punk Fest poster. And I was into punk at that time, but I never really knew the local scene. So I was like, oh, shit, a local fucking thing. I went as soon as I saw that, I requested that day off work. And that's where I met basically everybody. And Population Control was on that bill. And I looked them up and tried to see if they had a show coming up at any point. And there it was. And I had no idea who Code Orange was at that time because I wasn't necessarily into that side of hardcore. Because right. they're more of like the, not metalcore, but like the hardcore, which is like slam and like the crowd killing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of knew about the crowd killing stuff a little bit in like a parody song of Paparazzi by Rucka Rucka Ali, which one of the lines was, when I'm dancing at shows, I look like a 4-year-old throwing a tantrum. So I kind of like hinted at it a little bit, but I didn't actually knew that happened. And when I actually saw it for the first time, I was just like, oh, I'm used to like the actual like moshing. This is weird. You know what I'm saying?
And yeah.
One of the bands that was playing, one of the openers, Tugboat, at one point, I think there were two people that like actually got into a fight in the crowd during one of their songs. And when the song ended, they were just like, I mean, let's have some fun, guys. But like, come on, let's not do that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. And I had been to like punk shows before that. Like I went up to Detroit to see Pennywise and another time to see Face to Face and another time to see Toxic Holocaust with Nails. And so I've been in mosh pits before, and I was in the mosh pit during PopCon. Luckily, there was no crowd killing, flailing of the arms. It was just a regular, just good old moshing.
Right.
But I would have never gone into the Code Orange pit because I don't think I would have survived.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. And so, yeah, I've been to that. So the first show I went to that had local punk was the Code Orange show with their openers.
Oh, okay. That's cool. And then what about like overall, like what was your first like punk show just overall?
My first punk show, I would have to say it was Pennywise.
Okay.
And on their About Time tour. And that lineup was stacked as hell, too. It had Runaway Kids, Unwritten Law, Strung Out, and Pennywise.
Yeah, actually, I saw, this is back probably, like, this is probably either 99 or 2000, but I saw Pennywise. It was Pennywise, Strung Out, and I can't remember who the heck else was on that, but it was... That was a really that was a good show, and I had a broken hand at the time, so I couldn't get into the pit. I just stay at the side, but no, it was a really good show. So that's a pretty good first show.
Uh-huh.
So first show altogether though, like right. First concert, any kind
my
of music.
First ever concert. I don't know exactly what age I was, but it was at the Toledo Zoo Amphitheater. My dad took me to see Hall & Oates.
Oh yeah, that's not bad. I'm trying to think what my first one was. My first one was a Rally by the River. Actually, it was one of those 90s bands, either Sponge or Seven Mary Three. So yeah, everyone, like we say, everyone's got to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always talk about too is like, nothing beats that feeling of playing live music in front of people. It really is like, you know, I've had my party days. I'm sure everyone has their party days, but playing music on stage in front of people better than any drug I've ever
had. Right.
And you just, it's kind of like you just keep chasing that feeling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's one thing that never gets old.
Right. It's the funnest thing in the world. Doesn't really matter how big the crowd is either.
Yep.
And usually when you start out, because the Stinky Meatballs, when we had our first couple of shows, we were first. And the crowd was not bad. I mean, especially for the first one, because the first show, it was fun. It was kind of a weird offset event. Basically, what the first show we had was called Jakey Palooza that they put together at the Ottawa Tavern. Basically, they took all the Jacobs in the scene and they put them into one show.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah, it was a nice fun show. It was a free show, and we were the only. I think there was like another band that did like an unplugged version. Or something like that, and there were everybody else doing solo sets, but we were the only full band and the only punk rock band that was there. But it was still a very, very fun show. And at this time as well, I had T-shirts made for the Stinky Meatballs, and we had a lot of people actually show up in their shirts.
Oh
and
wow!
It was so awesome. And so yeah, and cool thing about the shirts too, I wanted to kind of shout out your buddy and your bandmate too, Rob Morrison, Rob Roy. He made me my screen for the Stinky Meatballs, and he showed me how to print. So I make my own shirts, and it's thanks to him.
Talk about somebody who's multi-talented. I mean, you can just do so much. But I'm trying to. So any good show stories? What's the craziest thing that you've seen when you were playing?
Well, I wouldn't say I was playing the show, but a couple ones that I remember. My first ever full set from start to finish wasn't with the Stinky Meatballs, but it was with my buddies in the band Canceled Out.
Okay.
And members of those guys, J-Mo and Jay, used to be in a pop punk band in the 90s called Syndicate. So
okay, yeah, I remember we played with Syndicate a couple times.
Dude, Syndicate is so fucking awesome. And basically for that one, it was originally supposed to be opening for the U.S. Bombs. And that one, the reason I was looking forward to that one so much is because also the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4, they had a song in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4.
Yeah.
So I was like really looking forward to this one. And then controversy went up, which I won't go into detail on.
Yeah.
It ended up half his tour fell through.
Yeah.
And I was extremely bummed at that point. But like 4 or 5 days later, J-Mo, who I was supposed to fill in for, he actually asked me, hey, did you want to make up for the show? I'm supposed to be pulling double duty for the show with both Canceled Out and Eagle and the Maniacs. Did you want to fill in for this show so I don't have to pull double duty? And I was like, absolutely, hell yeah. And then I later found out, because I knew about the Suicide Machines because of Tony Hawk as well, but I never actually got into them like I was supposed to. And then the band that they were opening for the show I was going to make up, and I did make up for, was Jay Navarro and the Traitors. I later found out that Jay Navarro was also the lead singer of the Suicide Machines, who also had songs in Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was able to make up basically everything. And another story I have that is similar is because of the Suicide Machines. They had a secret show at Handmade Toledo.
Yeah.
And the reason why that one was so, that one happened months and months later. That one, the reason why it was so crazy for me is because it was a secret show. I knew about it 24 hours before it happened. I was at work. And then I went and I knew Jay Navarro because I opened for him at that point. And basically what I did was I was thinking to myself, you know what? How about this? We have shirts. How about this? I go up to Jay Navarro and I was like, hey, dude, can I interest you in a Stinky Meatball shirt? And he's like, absolutely. So I run out to my car. I get him a shirt. I show him the design. He's like, awesome, dude. And what I like to do when I give people shirts is, hey, at some point, doesn't have to be today, but at some point, could you send me a selfie of you wearing it so I can upload it to our page? I have a whole photo album dedicated to it. He's like, absolutely, man. And then he went and performed with Jay Navarro and the Traitors. And then he went backstage after they were done. He came out from backstage wearing the shirt.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he, and I was like, holy fucking shit. And then he, then later on, like he performed with the Suicide Machines wearing the Stinky Meatball shirt.
Yeah. We used to with Yeti, whenever we'd play with like a more naturally known act, like, we've opened for No Bunny before, we opened for the Murder Junkies, and anytime anyone like that, we would just give them shirts.
Yeah.
Cause you figure, you know, a band on tour like that, you're always looking for clean clothes. So at some point down the line,
yeah,
they're going to be wearing that shirt and you never know where it's going to turn
out. So, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's like, and I was geeking the whole time. Like I was so stoked because now Suicide Machines had both songs in the first Pro Skater and Underground 2. I went kind of backwards with my Pro Skaters because I played 4, then 3, then 2, then 1. And 2 and 1 I played later on in my life. I mean, I played 2 at one point, but I didn't know it was 2. And because the mechanics and the gameplay is very similar to 3 and 4 in the PlayStation 1. And I knew it was kind of different, but I, you know, went about that like that. But Underground 2, I knew their song High Anxiety. And I knew the song New Girl because of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1. And they ended up playing New Girl that show. So it was really cool. But nonetheless, still somebody that somebody whose music I listened to in my favorite video games growing up wore one of my shirts. And it was like one of the most fucking amazing fucking moments ever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For all he knew, we could have sucked, but he still wore the shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, you know, but yeah, it was really fun. It was a really fun show.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to think if I had any other questions. First podcast, getting all those firsts out of the way.
Oh yeah.
I said, well, all right. So what plans do you guys have like within the Stinky Meatballs for the future? Are you guys recording anything or?
Basically what I want to do is at some point I want to actually get into a professional studio outside of the home recording, because the home recording, the demos and stuff, that's kind of more so a draft. I write and record all the home stuff. I'm not militant about the performances, because if you listen to our performances of some of our songs, you'll realize they're a little bit different than the actual like home recorded demos. Yeah. And that's how it's supposed to be.
Yep. I was just gonna say that's exactly the way it's supposed to be. And getting into the studio, I've always said it's like it's the most fun and the most frustrating thing you'll ever do in your life all mixed together. Cause you know, you're on like take 40 of something. I remember we were recording with, I recommend, Lake Bottom. I don't know if you're familiar with Lake Bottom.
Yeah. I've been there.
Okay. Yeah. Lake Bottom. JC does such a good job. But I remember we were doing the Black Triangle EP there, and I can't remember what song it was, but I think I was on like take 47 or something like that. And I come out and JC's like, how have you not thrown a baby fit by now?
Right.
And I'm like, man, cause this is fun. Like this is like, you know, if again, like we were talking about, if you're not having fun, like
don't do it.
Don't do it. Exactly. Right. Exactly. But, well, anyhow, I'm not going to take up too much of your time. I think we'll wrap this up here. Hopefully, you know, stuff keeps going on the up and up, and would you be interested in ever coming back for a part 2?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. And,